Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the AEW Dynamite Preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also this Rampage, baby, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0 pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a pretty good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamlet and Sidgwick to look ahead to Dynamite tonight. AEW Dynamite, blood and guts, to be specific. We've got all the fallout from Forbidden Door as well, but tonight is, of course, mainly about the Blackpool Combat Club versus the Jericho Appreciation Society.
Oh, my God.
Can't wait for this. I can't wait for it. I think on balance, I've really, really, really enjoyed this feud. We're kind of a long way removed from the 5-on-3 beatdowns that we saw quite often, or the 5-on-2, whatever the hell it was.
We're just willing it to get to this point.
Willing it to get to this point, and now that's got to this point and ahead of this point. It's mostly been absolutely tremendous, and I can't wait for the match itself. In fact, I'm still so into Jericho and Kingston that I don't even know if I wouldn't take a heel victory and take it all the way to Arthur Ashe, and then that can be, he finally wins the big one, and maybe, I don't want to say Jericho as a face, but the whole thing is, he needs to shake the guy's hand. He can shake the guy's hand and still be a knob to somebody else afterwards. That would be even a bigger endorsement. Like, I hate everyone, I hate pro wrestlers, but you know, I had to do it. No, this match should be absolutely tremendous. It's a centerpiece of the show, the undercard for which isn't particularly great, and there's a huge missed opportunity that I will bury imminently. But I was on Twitter last night, this morning, whenever, and it never really dawned on me that this is the sight we're going to see tonight. Because last year, it was an incredible thing last year. And it says something about the failure of last year's Blood and Guts match that they've never recapped. As hyped as I am, as hyped as most people are, if you remember last year, it felt like a landmark moment in the pandemic and stupid wrestling's situation in it, but it really felt like proper cliche, light at the end of the tunnel. Fans are going to come back soon. There's going to be 2,000 in Daly's place. Like, even with 1,000 at full gear, you can really hear them, and it just felt elusive. But 2,000, it's pretty much like there's been ECW major shows that were noisy as hell. I didn't have that many people, and it just felt like a return to normal. Felt like the build was really strong. It felt like the great lost thing that we missed out on as a result of the pandemic. It felt special. But with the hard camera being where it was in Daly's place, because they didn't want fans sat next to each other, it was just pointed against the entrance tunnels. So you could hear the fans, you could see Austin Gunn, but it wasn't quite the same. It felt as close to the same as you were going to get back then, but it didn't feel the same. And because I just hadn't thought about it, because the image of an AEW Blood and Guts match was in front of the tunnels, I didn't realize that there's going to be a whole bank of fans behind the cage and then get sweeping shots of the cage and the full panorama of the arena, and it's like 10,000 plus tickets sold in a hot wrestling city with a really rich history of cage matches. It's going to be special before the very first bell has rung. Can I fantasy book some stuff before I hand over?
Yeah, knock yourself out, yeah.
Right. I believe, because this story, ultimately AEW is all about building towards the future. They've been criticized for this, particularly in the early days, where it's like, you know what you've got now, just do that and then build towards the future. But this whole deal exists ultimately to get Wheeler Yuta over as a major star in about 3 or 4 years' time. Yeah, ditto with Daniel Garcia. And they are the youngest guys. In fact, Yuta and Garcia had like an incredibly well-received 60-minute Iron Man match, so we know they can do this. They're young lads, energy, intensity, stamina for days. They should start this match together, and they should be the thread, them two coming together. This philosophical war between pro wrestling and sports entertainment is probably best exemplified by these two men. I know Garcia is more of a pro wrestler, but the idea is Yuta is going to extract the wrestler from within him. That could be a great plot thread, but I just think the style that they're going for, the future booking vision, it would just mean a lot if they can pull off them two doing like a 45 to 50 minute shift, by the end of which they're completely soaked in blood. And even if one of them takes the fall or submits or surrenders or whatever, that performance level should be acutely focused on getting them two over as the Marathon Men. And then that way, you can build towards the big Jericho Kingston throwdown, the Castagnoli Jake Hager thing that they're probably going to do for like a minute or two as well is going to be in there. But I just think that it's the best way of doing it. If you put those two in there, you get the best two technically gifted wrestlers on the planet, or at least in the States, in it for the entire duration. So you've got a constant base level of amazing quality. Then you can build to the real main event established stars doing stuff like Kingston and Jericho and Moxley and Jericho. Midway through, you can have 2.0 coming together for the 3-on-2. And then I would get Castagnoli involved as the third man to equalize for the babyfaces, because them two feeding for Castagnoli, jumping over both ropes with his sort of torpedo, uppercut, shoulder barge, amazing thing that he can do. Over both ropes, I'll be unhappy if he doesn't clear both ropes. Matt Menard's face, just selling. Remember his first AEW appearance when it was in that trios match with Moxie, Sting, and Darby Allin? He's like, oh my God, I can't believe it's Sting. Is it you, Sting? And he's got torpedoed by Darby Allin. That was incredible. He's got the best face in pro wrestling. We know this.
Yeah.
Him selling for Castagnoli before it all gets too crammed and blood-soaked and chaotic, where you can't even see their faces, let alone make out different people in the match. I think it's pivotal to have Daddy Magic sell for Claudio before it all gets too crowded. Here's something. I was meant to bring up the tweet on my Twitter before coming in. But even before they were tied together in storyline, it was just when they were sort of forming the groups separately, I tweeted this. Obviously, I think a lot of people did say, oh, this is going to end up as being a program. But I tweeted that I will permit the worst spot in Modern War Games history under one condition. The big West Side Story standoff is a bit too cinematic. It's far too WWE. I think that was the moment last year's Blood and Guts got a little bit like, oh, come on, you were nailing it. You had the tone. There was just enough great action to modernize it, but you never betrayed the pro wrestling spirit. And then it got a bit cinematic in sports entertainment. I will permit that spot, nay, encourage it tonight, if it ends with all six members of the Blackpool Combat Club and associates just instantly headbutting all of the JAS and Sammy Guevara, just to subvert that spot, get six headbutts at once. Headbutts rule, headbutts are cool. I don't know what the finish is going to be. I don't know if they're actually going to extend it all the way, if this is going to be an absolute climactic feud ender. Maybe they learned a lesson, because if you recall last year, lots of the Pinnacle and Inner Circle stuff, they did the Stadium Stampede after it, and then they did the various sub-feuds, like MJF and Jericho, Shawn Spears and Sammy Guevara, and FTR versus Santana and Ortiz after it. I think a lot of people were kind of, oh, it's a bit of a bold experimental move, and it was very uneven. Like, the MJF-Chris Jericho thing probably outstayed its course, but the Dynamite match was amazing, mm-hmm. I thought. Shawn Spears, Sammy Guevara was a total over-delivery. FTR and Santana and Ortiz was a bit, could have gone much better, really, in retrospect. Mm-hmm. I think it fell well short of expectations, cursed, horrible, like gruesome spot involving Cash Wheeler notwithstanding. This maybe should be the end, and if it is, it should be the Blackpool Combat Club, particularly now that Moxley's got the interim world title. If it wasn't going to be the end, it feels like it should be the end now, because he should be doing proper business as a world champion to build him as one ahead of the CM Punk match. So I think the babyfaces will go over. I think this is going to be incredibly violent. I hope they don't add unnecessary weapons into the mix like they did last year. There's loads of chairs, and I just want the cage to be used as a weapon. It's one thing, like, in the fifth or sixth Blood and Guts match, where it's like, right, we do this every year, the novelty's worn off a little bit. Let's experiment with the format, get more weapons in. Like, they didn't do a good enough job last year of really selling the cage itself as a weapon, so I'd like to see them scale it back, and to do that, This should be absolutely incredible. My only misgivings are with having six people in each team. Was it 5 minute intervals last year?
Something like that, yeah.
I feel like that should be reduced, because if you go longer, that's not inherently a bad thing. It's a harder thing to pull off. But with the TV format, like people in the States, not necessarily me, because I was watching on Fight TV and it captured everything.
Yeah.
But people in the States were like, I get it. Put it on TV, get a rating. You have to have adverts because they drive the rights fees and the reason why all of pro wrestling exists now. But I think people in the States were thinking that's a bit much, the amount of adverts. If they keep the exact same format but add two more people, I just feel like that's going to compound the problem. Mm. But, you know, they're the listening company. There was a lot of feedback last year to that effect. They've been very clever of late, AEW, with really long matches and knowing when to insert the adverts. Like, if you recall the Hangman Page and Bryan Danielson match, like the first one, which went to the 60-minute draw, whenever it was a blade job, it was like, right, okay, it's 3 minutes where Hangman Page can sell and sell and sell and not lose the crowd because he's bleeding. That can be your advert. They did that twice, I think, mm-hmm. across the two matches. They were just genuinely very clever about how they did it. So hopefully lessons have been learned, because that is a sobering one. Hopefully there's no ridiculous cardboard. I don't know who takes the fall, but I do know this. I just feel like the best thing about this, right, is that if you consider, and I'm sorry I'm going on and on and on, but there really isn't that much in the undercard.
No, exactly.
So might as well talk about this. The best thing about AEW, and me and Hamflet have pointed this out regularly, is that they are exponentially better than us at their best. So they'll do something that we could never fantasy book and just think, that's the coolest thing ever. Thank God I've invested my time in this company. Eddie Kingston tonight is going to do something iconic. It's the gas can, but times two, because it's the blow off. I don't know what it is, but I love the idea of watching it, knowing that it's all but guaranteed to happen. He's got something amazing in mind. And looking at the look on my colleague Michael Hamflet's face as a segue, I think he's got an idea.
I've got it. I think he's going to take a swig of some booze and blow fire in Chris Jericho's face, because I'm a f***ing wizard, Chris. And then the Jericho Appreciation Society, in absolute fear and panic, will surrender. And I think, and then Jericho for weeks, if he even appears. Obviously,
well, he's
last
off
year,
next week, isn't he?
Yes, he's on tour.
He's gone anyway. But then you either have him disappear for a while, or he returns with the full bandages, the whole face. Like, what will Chris Jericho look like? The whole thing. They could do more about his hair being, because that was so teased before, how much he cares about his hair. Like, bits of it could be missing when he returns. You can have as much fun as you like. Play it seriously. Play it for laughs. It's a Jericho Appreciation Society. You do both. But the grand payoff to the wizard stuff is Eddie Kingston. Like the big, the iconic Mr. Pogo, was it? Like, would always blow fire and you get this incredible visual. It's just this, and again, it's never been done in AEW before. Somebody's like blowing fire. It makes serious, because it was Kingston was the first one to take the fireball. And it makes serious what Jericho has intentionally trivialized, I think, after the criticism of the first one. When that one wasn't really sold, as like it was like, anyway, switching gears here, like Dynamite rolls on, all that sort of stuff. After that, they kind of made it so silly, as if to trivialize something quite serious, and Jericho indeed call himself a wizard. Like, Kingston has threatened these awful things to the point of frightening Jericho when he sat on commentary on Rampage, like a couple of times, to the point where it all overspilled, didn't it, on last week's. But there was that great week where he called in and Jericho was just left terrified to ponder these awful things that Kingston had planned. I think that was ahead of Anarchy in the Arena, was it? So, yeah, trapped within the confines of what... It's the sort of thing where you can slip it into the match quite easily. Like, you can get that sort of stuff through mesh, or Kingston can have it on in the whole time, and it could, like, Regal could have the hip flask with him in the inside pocket of his suit or something like that. It's fairly natural and organic how that comes, and Kingston wanting to make Jericho suffer that wouldn't feel forced, because he would have had it in the back of his mind. You're going to feel the burns that I felt all this time ago when all this properly kicked off. So that would be the big Eddie Kingston visual for the win, because I think the babyface is going to win. You absolutely could carry it on.
Makes a lot more sense than what I was going to book, which was...
Physically impossible.
No, not physically impossible, but, well, I was going to say a lot more dangerous. They're both incredibly dangerous. Involving fire, spinning back fist on fire.
Also pretty good.
I would like that.
Flaming Hurricane.
Like, he covers his face and Jericho goes to try and fireball him, covers his face and his hand catches on fire and he's like, well... That's why I use it, spinning back fist.
The only thing with spraying alcohol is that Moxie's in the match.
Yeah.
And Kingston cut the promo ahead of Anarchy in the Arena when he's talking about how he's had a drink and still can't conquer his demons. He has to swim with his demons. So Maybe setting his fist on fire.
Mm. Or the, what's it called? Is it called a slapjack or just...
It used to be called slapjack when Stevie Ray used one.
The Santana Ortiz.
Oh, yeah.
That on fire as well.
What do they call it?
I can't remember
much about Santana and Ortiz because they are very much extras at this
point.
There's
a pool ball and a sock quality to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
The way it moves.
But on fire. How are you feeling? You agree? I think we all are kind of in agreement that Blackpool Combat Club kind of need to win this one.
Particularly with Moxley as a champ as well.
Well, last year serviced the heels winning more so than the babyface, didn't it, realistically? The Inner Circle, couldn't remember the name of them. The Inner Circle had sort of had everything. So the Pinnacle needed it to cling on as a group and to stay credible. It didn't really work in the end, but the result was important for them. And I think it's just as important for the Blackpool Combat Club here because... there has to come a point.
Madball.
That might Madball, be right, yeah.
Sounds right. This is not a sports entertainment match. This is something that pro wrestlers would fight in when it's just reached the point where this sort of level of violence is the only way. This goes against logic for the sports entertainment group to win in the end. I did know Sidgwick's excitement, but it's obviously because he's lived it in real life. He wants to see the All-American Americans explode again.
I do.
Because New Orleans just wasn't enough, was it? So having that tag team go again all these years later in Blood and Guts, they're going to do a little We the People moment, aren't they? And then they're just going to absolutely flush that aside and batter out of each other. I think I'd like to see... It invites you to think of spots you would like to see, even if, yeah, as we always say, they'll probably have better ones in mind, the wrestlers and the company alike. I think I'd like to see William Regal bloodied up bad, whether or not it's all the wrestlers are in the cage and then Jericho the prick slides out when they have the advantages and it's like a 2 or 3 on 1 attack and they do some really
buried for getting out the cage last time, I think.
Oh, they didn't, yeah. But like nasty stuff to Regal, just like because he's there and he's a bit of an easy target for them. Something along those lines. I'd like to see somebody absolutely pissing blood getting swung by Claudio.
Yeah.
So you're seeing like the kind of difference. It's an illustration of he's here now. Like here's this big swing. You love it. They did a really good job of saving it at Blood and Guts where you didn't quite get it in the Zach match and it was because they probably knew they needed something more. I think in that closing Forbidden Door segment, the risk was, we've had him. Where's the actual surprise? But then they kept the swing so that there was something crowd pleasing. I think a bloody swing is the sort of illustrative difference between who he was in WWE, Cesaro, versus who he is now, Claudio Castagnoli, somewhere where he can be. His creativity and, you know, there's more of a freedom of expression can be rewarded. So I think I'd quite
Cool Hanange doing his hair whilst he's getting swung.
Pretty great, because the flick comb was...
Jesus Christ, just trivialise the bloody last world born, why don't you?
Well, I was going to say Danny Magic, because he's dead good at bleeding, but then I was like, we're already booking him and stuff.
Slicking it back with his own blood when he's obviously kicked. I'm so excited about this match, and I sense that a lot of other people are, which is why I sense, as of this recording, AEW have kind of failed to add something that adds a bit of spice to the rest of it, because this is a really awesome match that completely warrants the payoff, completely warrants the anticipation because we've not had it in front of a crowd. There's jack shit going on underneath it.
I've just realised the women's spot's gone. Because I assume this is going to be the whole second hour, no?
Yeah, but we can still play the game.
Oh, we'll still play the game. Still play the game. But you, like,
it's just
normally...
it's just harder.
Yeah.
It's harder. Two more things. One, I'm very fascinated by the interactions between Kingston and Claudio because Eddie Kingston has been building for years and years, the idea that he hates Claudio.
Loved how it was shot at the pay-per-view. Moxley shrugging. Oh, jeez, not this
Moxley's
again.
God's sake, belt, man. Come on. Stop it. Like, it was great. Like, he just looked like fed up, but like, not in a I'm going to turn on him kind of way, but like, oh, how way, man.
Storms off in the road too, as well. Yeah. He says, I'm sorry, Mr. Eagle, but I'm not doing it if he's here. I'm off.
So I'm fascinated by the interactions here because the babyfaces are probably going to win. They're not going to just team up together. And are they going to make friends after? Because there's loads of money in an Eddie Kingston, Cesaro, Claudio feud. Even if you don't know the reasons behind why they hate one another, which are themselves ambiguous because Eddie Kingston knows that he's so good at it that you don't know where the line between fiction and reality begins and ends.
Stuff again, isn't it?
Yeah, played it's a bit like that. Yeah. So the general gist of the story is that they were feuding in Chikara, and the idea was that Eddie Kingston spotted a rat, and he said that Claudio was a disingenuous, insincere piece of shit. and he's actually an arsehole. And I know I'm playing the heel, but I'm telling you right now, you might hate me, you should hate him. That was the gist. That's three great matches. And to put it over all the more, Claudio turned heel and joined like a massive dominant heel unit. And Kingston was like, I'm right. I told you I'm right. Mm. Then they had another match. And then they were going to do the third singles, or at least within that feud. And that's when he got the call to go to the Fed. So I don't know if Eddie's been just desperately thinking one day in one promotion, this will actually get paid off and the mythology will be enriched if I keep at it, or if he just genuinely hates him because he's so good at it. So I really don't know. But ultimately, let's not fast forward all of this in one night. The babyfaces win. Have Kingston refuse to celebrate, because even if you aren't familiar with the Chikara stuff, and I only know sort of a bullet point guide, I was never like invested in it week to week or episode to episode or part to part, whatever Chikara did with it. You will be able to have Eddie Kingston cut a 5-minute promo and explain it better than I just have by 1,000,000 miles.
One final thing before we move on to the rest of this card and some of the stuff that should be on it.
Yes.
I've booked the spot. And it's one of a classic Wilborn. I was thinking, which one do you do it with?
The cage explodes. what if Eddie Kingston sets the two cages on fire?
No, what I was going to say is, we were sat here, we got Daddy Magic here, got Cool Hand Ange there, friends of ours, we love them, we think they're fantastic. But which one's going to do the spot with Claudio? Why not both?
Double swing.
One's getting swung. One's getting UFO'd. I mean, it's probably physically impossible, but Claudio.
It's Claudio, so yeah. Probably not. So probably not.
That's great.
I will forget to say this at some point. There might be a late-in-the-day edition announced on Twitter, like a couple of hours before showtime. Tony Khan is usually so good at this. I don't want to out Tony. Put Phoenix or Death Triangle in a match on a show. Two rings.
Two goddamn rings.
Two goddamn rings. He could run across the top rope on one ring, hop onto the turnbuckle, someone is by the apron on the other ring selling, and then he can run across the second set of ropes and then kick them in the face. Dave Meltzer will give that match literally 2 stars on top of whatever it was going to get if he sees that Phoenix spot. And critical acclaim is still a bit of currency. Not so much anymore because it's so widespread, but ultimately, if you want people to go ballistic in their praise about this product, have Phoenix work a match on a show with two rings. It just makes so much sense.
Do like House of Black and Death Triangle and call it the final fight or something. One last trios match. Let them all go wild with two rings, all them ropes.
You could that. Potentially.
If Pac's got his new belt. You know, like
if you did that in addition to Blood and Guts and you shot one great promo and one great angle on top of those two matches, you could have categorically, objectively, the best episode of North American television ever.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Well, I was going to ask about that, actually, because I was going to say on this show, is there going to be much fallout from Forbidden Door? Obviously, Moxley's busy in Blood and Guts, but that would be a way, Hamflet, to get the new All-Atlantic champion on this show. He's showcased on the road, too. He's got a great promo on there. Go and check that out. He reintroduces himself, in case you're unaware, and explains where the term the bastard comes from. But, yeah, do you foresee more of that? I, as soon as Sidge mentioned a Phoenix or a Death Triangle match, it just made so much sense.
Well, the interesting thing about Forbidden Door was, even though it was, and we were critical of AEW for this, obviously, even though it was AEW and New Japan in this dream card, it wasn't really a dream card. It was built to episodically. So typically now we'd be talking about, oh, it's the table setting Dynamite tonight. But we don't necessarily have that because, for one, it's Blood and Guts, and for two, it's Forbidden Door, and that's slightly different to the pay-per-views. I don't necessarily think it is that different. It felt like all the things that were being set up, whether you liked them or you didn't, were kind of paid off on the night. Maybe the Young Bucks are none too pleased with what went down and we'll finally get Sting and Darby getting the shot of the tag titles.
Yeah.
That's overdue. So maybe you start heading towards Sting and Darby and the Young Bucks. That's just a really good TV main event. So possibly start addressing stuff there. Other than that, nothing really off the card. I loved it. Like, a brilliant show helped by, I think, lowered expectations. But I loved it in the way where what they could use to their advantage at a show like that was that most things felt fairly conclusive because of the nature of the show. Like, I'm not... One of the things, obviously, they deemed important to keep selling was this Blood and Guts match that they gave the last section of the show to. I'm not that... Nothing I can remember from the show has left me this feeling of, right, I want more. Let's keep going. No, like, loads of the guys have gone back to New Japan, all that kind of thing.
Just a thought, maybe mention your AEW Women's World title.
Well, yeah... But there's no precedent for that from the normal AEW pay-per-view. Yeah, no. So you used to say we're going to get that tonight. the payoffs to all the big matches were payoffs because they kind of had to be. You know, Okada said it today, the door's closed again, but it'll be open one day. That's how it should be. The last thing you want now, especially while there's still Ring of Honor up in the air, is to have like a few hangers-on from New Japan and be like, you thought the door was closed? Like, you never knew me at all. No, I did know it. Close the door. Close the door. Just for a little bit.
Yeah.
So... if anything, they've got a real opportunity here. Let's look at the last 6 months as a bit of a... you've got a really cool payoff tonight. You've got this gimmick match that people have got a lot of faith in. You have an opportunity to deliver everything, including a finish that people just remember with joy in their hearts rather than sadness. Do that, and then everything back to square one a bit. Just think, start from next week onwards, setting up some long stories again. Don't just look at All Out, because there's some obvious stuff you could book for All Out. Start looking to Full Gear. Start looking to next year's Revolution with your stories. Like, there's a couple of short-term wins. You know, like Wardlow was nothing to do with Forbidden Door, but you should be starting to think now about when Wardlow's going to brutalise Scorpio Sky and win the TNT title. So there's a lot...
But, like, let the fans know when.
Yeah, but let people know that, like, if you've got a little gap this week, or certainly starting next week, like, just start setting the table again for AEW to get good.
For Thunder Rosa, I just put the video that you put on Road 2 on Dynamite. It's like 4 minutes... at most, it's just them recapping what happened at Forbidden Door and said, it's a great match, Tony Storm's got nothing to be ashamed of, isn't Thunder Rosa great? Because it just, especially with the reaction from last time, and I thought it was justified the way
it's a good optics call for them to do that.
It's one of those weird things, right, where, you know, there's certain, we live in a wrestling fan bubble, and AEW's kind of burst that bubble by saying, well, actually, a lot of the things that wrestling fans really like actually translate to incredibly lucrative pay-per-views, like other promotions and... Japanese pro wrestling, which never thought, if you want Lucha Libres, go to Japan. You know, like, a lot of people in wrestling who somehow still had very high ranking, powerful jobs just didn't think certain things that us hardcore fans are into would ever make money or would be worth doing. And yet, in fact, AEW have proven. There's also a bit of a fallacy involved where you think, all right, well, this is great, so just do it. Like the King of the Ring pay-per-view, people love tournaments, people have ultra fond memories of King of the Ring, and never really drew. Never really drew. In fact, the best draw in King of the Ring, yes, it was during a boom period, but it was when the tournament itself was a lesser concern to Hell in a Cell matches or McMahon melodrama.
The strange logic they applied to that was, well, nobody knows what they're paying for, even though theoretically you're paying for more permutations than just a set card, because you can fantasy book all these brackets.
Yeah.
But the rationale was, it doesn't draw because we can't sell them a final.
Tournaments don't draw. King of the Ring hasn't really drawn that well historically compared to the other four of what was then known as the Big Five. WrestleMania 4 didn't do particularly well compared to the other golden era WrestleManias. And it's the same thing with video packages. People love video packages, and it's not just, oh, I need to be reminded because I need exposition. Just people think they're very well shot. People think they're nice to tell a story. Sometimes it's way less contrived and better than, here's a backstage interrupted interview to tell the story. Instead, you can just do it with the video package. Everyone, at least on my Twitter timeline, is endorsing more video packages and adding stuff specifically from Road 2, because it's such a great little YouTube series, to Dynamite. And yet, despite a lot of people loudly proclaiming their love for these, the segments in which nothing is live or happening or pre-taped die. Just constantly die.
That's a fair point.
So it's really odd. I understand why they do it, even if I personally don't like it. And that is not putting the things on Dynamite.
I don't know how much this is really being like discussed at the moment, but
they'll want a big number tonight as well. They'll want a huge number. They don't want to do anything to risk it.
This is kind of like that old-fashioned thing where they've set something up with the intent. The pro wrestling and the booking is designed to draw the number. There's no tricks. There's no, we're going to add this match at the last minute. We're not expecting this audience because of the Big Bang Theory. It's none of that. It's the wrestling. They want the wrestling to stand up for itself and draw the number tonight. It's not got talked about much into, like, AEW's numbers have kind of plateaued again. Like, there's you know, undulating interest in the product from time to time. But remember a while ago, it was always like hovering above a million, and it's like, what's going to get them to 1.5 every week? And they just never really got there. We've dropped to like the 800s, 900s now, and it's there. We're not talking about like what's going to get to 1.5. It's like what's getting them back over a million and all that sort of stuff. Or we're just not talking about numbers at all, I guess. It's kind of got a bit ordinary. I wonder if, so like Chris Harrington, the numbers guy, like the 3 years into the project, pretty much, and one of the big criticisms of Dynamite amongst some of the bad booking has been the format is maybe becoming a bit exhausting, and it's like the rationale is always, well, you know, it's chasing the numbers, this quarter hour spikes, this does this. It might be time after tonight to take some risks. Like, maybe, like, yes, video packages historically have saw the rating go, like, dip for a second.
You train your audience.
But you retrain your audience. Yeah. And like, is it, have we reached saturation point with this version of Dynamite, and is it contributing to why a lot of people haven't enjoyed it? And it's like, well, what if we do lose 25,000 there, if we can gain 100,000 there, like long term? And the show would probably feel fresher. Like, you know, he doesn't and never will again, but Vince McMahon used to take those risks, used to make changes accordingly when he was in a ratings war. And they're not in one anymore, but that's destined to make you complacent sooner rather than later. And especially if you settled with your numbers, I'd be quite interested to see them change tact in that regard. Maybe tonight's probably the worst possible example for that. But then again, you are putting on a virtual hour-long main event, so I suppose this is their first experiment.
I forgot, I was going to ask you earlier. I know he said about it's best for Punk to just stay home and recover and blah, 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 and that's why he wasn't at Forbidden Door. Disregarding all that, Danielson on commentary for Blood and Guts?
Ooh, he's an awesome commentator. He's really like enthusiastic. He's like, he's better at not being a great commentator, if that makes any sense at all. He just gives the wrestler's voice. Yes. Why not?
Yeah. Let's talk Orange Cassidy. Ethan Page, then. Orange Cassidy had a hell of a night on Sunday.
He did. The match was absolutely incredible. I rewatched it a second time, and it's still somehow, even though you know when the false finishes are happening, it's still just an incredibly dramatic, perfectly worked match. Just Orange Cassidy, the genius of Cassidy is that I put this in my ups and downs column, this particular take. So the Mega fans will forgive me for repeating
myself. How many ups and downs for
not four ups and downs, my star ratings.
Oh, okay.
I went 4-3 for that match. It's that Orange Cassidy kind of did the red button meme where, you know, like the guy sweating. It's like there's two things where it's like, oh, I've contradicted something I'm going to say. I've said in the past, if I say the thing that I'm going to say here. He did the red button meme sequence where he took the piss out of Will Ospreay's like go-to signature trick, where at the start of his matches, there's this incredible athletic counter-driven flurry. And then it's like, right, I'm going to do a martial arts pose now, which is basically, go on, clap. Like, clap, I've done my athletic impressive stuff. This is your cue, Seals, to clap. And it's all a bit like, this is awesome. And it's like, it's very engineered and a bit soulless at this point. When Cassidy just went, and took the piss out of it, he popped, I'm guaranteeing you, he popped people who hate Will Ospreay for doing that, but they also hate Orange Cassidy for like his entire act. So, like, they're probably confused about, yeah, should I be popping for this? Should I not? He's just a goddamn genius. This match basically exists for a pretty, you know, when we say that, like, yeah. Ethan Page has got a very good bug-eyed face where he can express being incredulous or offended or furious, and his eyes can bulge. He's a good foil for Cassidy's shtick, and Tony Khan has probably realised, oh, Ethan Page is a good foil for Cassidy's shtick. But it's interesting that he's paying for Jane, apparently, Starship, that got leaked, if he can get the rest of the, if he can get the fee, the right sorted. So he's paying for Jane, which is probably going to be, A, at some cost, and B, he's already invested, so he does really like Cassidy.
Probably pay for Sledgehammer for Claudio, then.
Jesus. Yeah, it's... People, that interaction will get really over, I think, yeah, but that's a separate point. And he's just put him in the possibly the second biggest singles match on the entire card. He wanted people to emerge from Forbidden Door thinking, Jesus Christ, Orange Cassidy's back and he's great. Cassidy could be a potential All-Atlantic title challenger. Or I just feel like he wants to do something with him if he's in a singles match on this card.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, one further, I think he might be thinking Cassidy Moxley as a TV one-off for the interim AEW title. The match was so well received, and now he gets, but he had to lose, obviously. So you have this incredibly well received match that kind of is the reminder of the very best. I think that's Orange Cassidy's best ever match. I think it was better than the Pac match, and that was his best match before that. Certainly the best exhibition of everything there is to love about Orange Cassidy. Typically, this is where I'd say, now what you do to capitalise on that is have him disappear for 6 months so you can forget all of this sort of stuff and then you get him again. But the reality is...
You're the outlier.
Yeah, the reality is, super hot, again, fresh back off an injury. So he was already, he's already had that little break. You do everything. You did like a micro version of what you had on Sunday, some best bits, and then you get a win. And the win is the important bit. And you capitalise on... There's a renewed, I would say a renewed interest in Orange Cassidy. People like, I might not like him, but only because I feel like I've seen it all. And then every now and then a match comes along where I haven't. And we're like, that's the difference. I love what the gimmick is. I love that it riles people up because I don't get why people don't get it. It's genuinely one of them things where I was like, I 100% don't believe your take on Orange Cassidy, because if you understand pro wrestling, you understand what this gimmick is. It's so much closer to traditional pro wrestling than a lot of those bad faith critics would have you believe.
It's the best bit of the punchline.
Yeah, it's just, it's so psychologically sound that I, like, I know people are lying when they're, when, or they're, you know, they're kind of, what's the phrase on?
Bad faith.
Yeah, like, yeah, they're kind of showing themselves up or whatever that, I can't remember the phrase, but like, so it's just, I've never really understood, but I get bored of it pretty quickly. So, or the more I see of it, the more I see him fire up, the less I'm into it. I think that's what it is with Orange Cassidy. So he goes on and wins another couple of matches. He gets this match with John Moxley. And anybody gets can get sucked in, including John Moxley. Cool Hand Luke can still get sucked into Orange Cassidy's game. And they're gonna have an awesome TV main event for the interim title as well.
It was almost, that was the match that didn't happen as well, if you remember.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so oh, yeah. It's just like, it's this
he's
is
obviously the, wanted to do it.
This is the start of that with a fairly routine win. And the tell here is Ethan Page under the side of the ring, isn't it?
With these bug eyes, it should be amusing.
I forgot to mention this earlier, and it's going over all ground, but I don't care. Your reaction, the reaction in the Sidgwick household when Shibata came out on Sunday.
Oh, my God.
You popped in off, and I was like, if he's reacting like this, God knows what you're doing.
Couldn't hear the music. So they left the camera on the crowd on the stream for so long. I'm like, well, who is it? Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? And then you see him on the right.
Oh, my God, he's such looking, a piece.
Just looks better and better with every return. Yeah, it's cruel, doesn't he?
It's cruel. It's cruel. Yeah, absolutely popped my tits off. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, he's going to wear aviators. As if Shibata himself doesn't exude the very essence of cool, he's going to wear literally the coolest garment ever created. Is there anything cooler than the aviator?
I think so.
The... flick comb.
The switch comb.
Switch comb there.
That's pastiche of cool. Like, yeah. Aviators are just...
I'm going to be a massive hypocrite because I also think a good denim jacket rivals it, and that's another Orange Cassidy staple. Maybe I'm just jealous of him.
I think you are jealous
of him. I think that's what it must be.
Do you want to know my big takeaway from Forbidden Door? The thing that I've discovered?
This is going to just piss me off.
No. Shingo can go. First Shingo match
Shingo.
For me.
Shingo.
Very good.
I'll watch more. He's
good.
Absolutely
good, he is.
Unbelievable.
I'm going to tweet it
confirmed.
Out. Shingo's good. Pass it on.
Shingo.
Hidden gem discovered at Forbidden Door.
Don't what? Sleep on and then put his name in inverted commas. Shingo Takagi.
2019 was one of the best years of wrestling ever. Jesus Christ, Double or Nothing was great. WWE is like the weirdest thing. It's getting so desperate with its absolute insanity. The G1's awesome. Moxie's awesome. It's just a great time. NXT isn't quite dead yet. Actually, the Sinister Structure. It actually is, but it wasn't until then.
They had its season finale. They had the WrestleMania. And we got to be there for it. So,
yeah.
Like,
so it's a pretty awesome year. And one of the best matches of that very year was Shingo versus Ishii in the G1. It was so good. They hit each other so hard. It was so dramatic. It was so terrifying. They felt like mythological creatures in there. And my God, it was like Meltzer. And I agreed with them for once. I was like, yeah, great. Don't do that again. They simply hit each other too hard. Kind of betrayed the point, but it was still awesome.
There's also a championship match tonight, Michael Hanfler.
Feel like one.
TBS title on the line. Jay Cargill issued an open challenge, or I should say, Stokely Hathaway issued it for her, and Tony Khan's, because he's a night owl, said he'd offer it out to the locker room. Layla Gray has picked it up. Any chance the title changes hands tonight?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I had to ask.
It's Jade Cargill could smash her across two rings. Just batter her. Like, just beats her up in one ring and then steps into the other one, beats her up in that one, just to make it slightly different to the regular.
Kicks her into the second ring.
Perfect. And then you've got, like, something that's slightly different than the usual Jade Cargill squash.
Bump would be ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah. Again.
Bangle through the ropes.
Not my problem.
Just have to, like, slither through the ropes like an eel.
Again, another spot you could
do. Can't you deal with it?
Another spot you could do in the Death Triangle versus House of Black match that they should have booked. In the Pac Omega matches, like, Pac and some, because he's just a phenomenal, ridiculous athlete. Like, imagine an actual proper American TV Pac versus Claudio match. I'm like, yeah.
Thank you.
Pac can do this bump where it looks like he's been sucked back first into a vortex. Remember, he could do that through both sets of ropes.
Mm-hmm.
Put Phoenix on the card. No title change.
He's done to play the game.
Well, this is ladies' night, and
not sure if you weren't here for this last week.
No, I have been just advised on the rough premise.
Oh, the game is that it's very cynical what AEW does. We've discussed this at length for, what, 3 years at this point. There's one women's match per segment. So to get a little bit of fun out of it, not that the wrestlers aren't very good or very
willing.
They deserve
better,
yeah. But because it's always around the same time, the ultimate thing would be like, oh, it's 1 minute 25 again, sort of thing. That's what we're trying to develop. But this is different because Blood and Guts is going to eat up the majority of the second hour.
Is it going last?
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Then again,
it's TV, isn't it? Like, I know that, like, they can break rules for TV. We've had, like, world title matches going first. Like, Kenny and Brian went on first, Arthur Ashe. And
I think,
Could they do the old gimmick, though, of, like, we're just going to stick with this for as long as it goes? If it goes last, is all I'm saying.
Possibly.
Hangman and Brian, that's how they got the hour out of it, was having it start the show.
The lead-in's always very important. So maybe you could, but it makes the game a little bit harder. But the game, Will Hamlet, is to guess the time in which the very first sting or note is played from the first woman of the one women's match is going to happen. The idea being, oh, it's 1 hour 25 minutes again, that's funny. So the game, just to... reminds you, in case you forgot, is this is ladies' night. Oh, what a night. I try, you do like Vic Reeves. I try and do butt rock at the end. This is ladies' night. Oh, what a night. So that's the game.
Okay.
Who wants to go first?
You go first. It seems you didn't play this last week.
All right. Well, I'll go big or go home then. 5 minutes, 38 seconds. Jade Cargill is the first person you see on Dynamite.
Wow! So here's what happened at Forbidden Door.
And I'll give you my reason, because
she's a star.
She's a star. Every now and then, a star appears, and it's particularly damning on one AEW star who I'm not going to name because the stats are out there for you to find out yourself. But it really sounds like I'm burying him for years. This stat.
So what was it? Sorry, five.
I said 5:38. Let's go 5:38. There is this graph that appears. It's often Thurston, but I think sometimes it's other people. But it's legit anyway. They've sourced the data from the right places, mm-hmm. where there is a table of the most Googled AEW wrestlers. There's one massive AEW homegrown star that's never appeared on any of these tables that we've been looking at over like 3 years, and that's not ideal. I'll not name them. Jade Cargill this time was particularly high up. Paige Van Zandt was number one.
They'll love Paige Van Zandt.
Paige Van Zandt was number one. But obviously, she's not working tonight. So, and I don't necessarily think people are necessarily going, Paige VanZant, AEW Dynamite in action. I don't think those will be Paige VanZant's, you know,
what do you think,
most Google terms.
What do you think the terms are?
Well, based on when Andy Murray was off and I was covering the news and I was looking around for like big news headlines using the aggregating sites that exist currently, I think it's the trousers she works out in. I think generally that's what people go looking for when they're looking for Paige VanZant, because there was an awful lot of things that I decided not to contribute to whatculture.com/WWE, because there was a lot of them, a lot of wrestling websites that should know better than to be like, check out what Paige VanZant was working out in. What, not the actual exercise, what she was working out in. So yeah, bloody in their knuckles, like clicking those sites. So I'm going to go Jade Cargill, because she was like third or fourth in that list.
Yeah, it could be one of those where the person's already in the ring. You don't have to specify the woman, just the first woman. Jade Cargill for the music. Match.
Yep.
Okay. Does that have to be just the first woman? Does that have to be, you have to specify the woman?
Bless him.
You have to specify the woman. It's fine. It's not the game. Wilborn.
36 minutes dead. That's what I'm saying.
You didn't have to explain what the crowd are going to be like. That's not the game.
I just think it's going to be moved from the lull in the second hour to the lull potentially in the first
Orange
hour.
Orange Cassidy opens.
Orange Cassidy, Ethan Page opens. Then maybe we get, we'll talk about Christian Cage in a second, maybe a bit of that. I think that's probably going to start, or at least get the ball rolling in terms of people coming out before the top of the hour, so that people are like, in their eyes, you need to tune in, because at 9, or what is it, 9? Yeah, 8, I'm telling you. At 9, it's going to start kicking off, just to give them that buffer, like you say, for, because if it's, what, 10 people entering...
12.
12 people. Well, yeah, 2 star. Oh, no. Yeah. No, yeah. 10 people to come. That's 50 minutes without even breaking a sweater. So well, 36 minutes, bang on.
They usually do a little recap of the pay-per-view, but I think because it's not entirely canonical, I think it'll be kept brief if there's even one at all. And then dee 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 dee. Or maybe we've got Jane. Jane. I saw that song. Either way, Orange Cassidy's and he's going to be foist, and then you get the Men of the Year. Because people are more likely to think, oh, he's in Page. Oh, no, Orange Cassidy, that's good. So then that'll go, not long. Not long. I hope it doesn't go long. Well, he's funny with the bug eyes, and Cassidy is, far from Cassidy, I got the joke. Mm. 8 minutes. And then that takes us to about 15.
I love the maths here.
And then, yeah. I'm going to go for 22 minutes. So I think it's going to go Cassidy, Ethan Page, Jade, and if there's something else, it'll be before Christian Cage, because Christian Cage can double as there. You've seen some decent action. Like, get over it, because you need to save your energy for the main event, and then Cage can be the buffer. So I'm going to go for 21 minutes, imagine that, and 53 seconds.
Just thought, what about if they do open with Orange Cassidy and Ethan Page, and then Orange Cassidy gets the win easily because Ethan Page is a loser. And
he's funny.
He's
the tightest tits in the game.
Tightest tits in the game.
So what Orange Cassidy's going to do tonight, he's going to try and do a tip pop, but not do it.
Oh, like
lazy ones, like slow tip pops. Scorpio Sky returns, they lead a beatdown, and Wardlow makes his first mate, and it's Orange Cassidy. He comes to make the save, and like Orange Cassidy gives him his thumb of approval, and Wardlow's finally got an ally. Because, like, luckily, Orange Cassidy's not really associated with best friends anymore. So Wardlow wouldn't be associated with a loser group like this. Like, he's got his first ally.
Finally, Sid, we mentioned it before that we're going to hear from Christian Cage tonight. Does that mean Jungle Boy could return tonight?
No, he's injured. Which makes it,
Still got the bullet point, though. Still counts.
I think that
counts.
Christian Cage is going to take storyline credit for Jungle Boy's injury in his promo tonight. Basically saying something to the effect of, like, you're too much of a bitch. First of all, you're a bitch. You can say you're too much of a bitch to even, like, I've turned on you. I've smashed your head in with a chair. I've said that your dad's dead, and you're still too much of a bitch to come and face me man to man. Or maybe he doesn't take credit for the injury. He's like, what's wrong with you? He could, like, pretend to be, he could be disingenuous. Like, come on, I've said your dad's dead. I've turned on you, battered you with a chair, taken away your last friend. Like, come on, what's wrong with you, Jungle Boy? You can't be a real man. And Shivani and Jim Ross can be the whole, like, authoritative fellas going, oh, you goddamn it. You know that he's out there on a shelf, Christian Cage. You know that he's injured. Jungle Jack could be out here right now if he could. So would Jungle Boy, Jim. That's still his name. So I think that is going. They're going to incorporate, basically tell you that Jungle Boy's injured, and because they don't, they're not really disclosing any injuries, which makes me think that's a concussion factory, which is not good because some of them just have bad shoulders. I don't want to think of everyone has a concussion
because have been out front with Brian yet, just because he alluded to it.
Kyle O'Reilly's got stomach, but no one knows. And like, this is not disclosing the nature of the injuries. Like, I wish they would.
Yeah.
I wish they would. It's very WWE
COVID, isn't it?
Yeah. Like so, but they will basically say he's injured. They probably won't specify what the injury is, but they kind of have to at this point because people will think, well, what a little bitch Jungle Boy is.
Yes.
If he's been like buried for having a dead dad and got turned on and he hasn't even, you know,
he's got his revenge. We got a cage. We got two cages. What do you think Christine's going to say tonight?
We got three cages. Me!
What a hell of a promo to follow on from, though. One of the best heel promos of the year, that wasn't it?
It was fantastic. And like, just to sort of repeat my point from last week, one of the awesome things about it was one of the only really rewarding bits of long-term storytelling in AEW at present. And I thought it really stood out for that reason. It was one of these things that, that's AEW. Some of this has not really felt like that. That is. And it was so AEW that they've set the next part of the story in motion while Jungle Boy is off, because even if he was fully fit, it'd be, you know, he'd be selling it. What's going on with Luchasaurus? What did happen to Marco? You have to address that fairly quickly before it becomes, well, he got released and ghosted by Tony Khan.
I think that was, I was listening to Observer Radio, and I think the implication was that it was just meant to be a gasp. Ooh, you mentioned someone who doesn't really get mentioned on TV anymore. I think people were simply meant to infer from the name drop of, remember what happened to Marco, as in he got released because I kind of took his place and I'm more relevant. So if you don't stick with me, the same thing could happen to you, which is a bit harsh.
It's something to explore, though.
He didn't get released. His contract was not renewed.
Yes. It's certainly something to explore, like Luchasaurus as a sort of...
Bitch.
A bitch. Confused.
Luchasaurus.
A confused heavy.
I've got a really good... I don't want to go full, here's how you do MJF and CM Punk, but play Jungle Boy's music and have Christian Cage come out on Luchasaurus' shoulders.
Really great.
In the old, my peeps at.
Love it.
That's it.
Yep, that's the one.
There we go. There you go. Let us know your thoughts ahead of AEW Dynamite. I don't know about usage, but I cannot wait to review the show tomorrow. Handful up.
Yeah, buzzing.
Enjoy the egg and spoon race.
This is bad. That's Christian Cage to you, dickhead. That I love it so much.
So bad, isn't it? Because like a lot of the time on the podcast, we're diplomatic, brutally honest about the hardship of having children.
Yeah,
like, I'm going to watch my two boys at different points of the day do different sports days tomorrow. Should be like a joyous occasion. And like for a change, I'm actually like, yeah, parenting. And then you're like, oh, well, could we be doing this?
My image is, for whatever reason, you don't get up early and watch Dynamite, and then the lads are like doing it. Dad, look, I'm winning. And you're just staring at your phone. Yeah, good work, son. Like watching Blood and Guts on his phone instead.
It won't be Dynamite, but it will be Twitter.
You can follow us all on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. You can follow Michael Hamlet at...
Michael Hamlet. You
can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. This has been the AEW Dynamite Preview. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.